Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What's up, guys? Today's date is Sunday, April 26th. I'm Steven Masso. As always, you're listening to Via the Source. Now, guys, in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the rest of the Dolphins picks, the ones from the second round on. I didn't really get a chance to do a podcast about it, but I do have a written article after day two. But then, of course, we had this most recent day of the draft, so that will all be covered in this episode. And we're also going to be going over some other guys from across the league, kind of giving my thoughts on some of the better picks and some of the worst picks in my eyes. So we'll begin with some of the Dolphin players that were drafted on day two, and this will be kind of some of the same points that was mentioned in the article. So if you read that, some of this may sound familiar. But of course, towards the tail end of the first day of the draft in the first round, the Dolphins, of course, selected offensive tackle Austin Jackson and then Auburn cornerback Noah Igbinoghene. And I said that both of those picks, while they are good, those are still guys who are, you know, in a sense, very raw. They have a lot to develop. They're still young players. They have a lot of great physical skills. But as of right now, there is just, you know, some added risk there just because of how raw these players are. And they will be kind of betting on themselves to be able to develop them. And I will say that, you know, in a sense, I could say that both those picks might have been considered reaches based on what some of the other experts were saying. So day two of the draft kind of featured more of that same kind of mentality. They selected guard Robert Hunt. They selected defensive tackle Raekwon Davis out of Alabama, and then safety Brandon Jones. And again, this was kind of more of the same. It was none of those flashy names that you know, fans were thinking of when we heard about how many picks we were going to have in 2020, but that doesn't mean that these guys weren't the right move for the team. So to kind of just discuss each of these guys individually a little bit, Robert Hunt was described as a mauler. He is just this massive body of a man, just somebody that is very versatile. There's some debates whether he will play guard or whether he will be a move to tackle, but I think he will be at guard. Then we have Raekwon Davis, who is another guy, just a massive body, somebody that when he was drafted, you saw Brian Flores' face just light up with excitement. So, of course, that was a guy that he wanted to go out there and get. And then safety Brandon Jones out of the University of Texas. He is somebody that we had the chance to speak to him over the phone or on Zoom during a press conference, and he was just extremely, extremely educated. They had a story up before the draft of how he studied each and every one of the NFL's playbooks leading up to the draft just to kind of get a feel for it. And when you had a chance to speak to him, you realize that that's no joke, that this guy is actually about it. And I tweeted that he sounded like he's ready to run through a brick wall. And something they asked him, why did Brian Flores select you? And he said that he thinks he did it because of his versatility, that he was able to play wherever he wanted him to. He said he enjoyed being in the box. He says he likes how nasty it is in there and the physicality involved with that. And of course, you think back to the safety Brian Flores first had when he became the Dolphins coach, Minkah Fitzpatrick, somebody who was kind of reluctant to the idea of being versatile, of being in the box. It didn't work with him. So a common thing with all these guys that are getting picked, one thing you will always hear just about in every single guy that's gotten drafted is, I'll play wherever coach wants me to play. That's a big thing. And it really seems like the character of these guys was weighed heavily when it came to the evaluation that the Dolphins had on all these players and who they were going to draft. It really seems like they went out and they made sure they got guys who were, you know, they had leadership qualities, they had just tough mentality, they had this willingness to play in different positions, and then they had these, just, they picked guys who were extremely educated, who are willing to learn, who are willing to be students of the game. Whether that pays off or not, I'm not entirely sure, because in my eyes right now, it still looks like they may have passed up on some talent in favor of those character things, but at the end of the day, it is their decision and we have to trust their process. Now, the day two of the draft kind of left a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouth. That's because they missed out on DeAndre Swift, who was drafted by the Lions, and then J.K. Dobbins, who it appeared was going to fall all the way to Miami, was taken right before, the pick before, by the Baltimore Ravens, and the Dolphins were unwilling to give up on some of these late late round draft picks and trade up to go get one of these running backs. So it was, a very frustrating period for a lot of fans there. You could tell that there was a lot of frustration. I kind of floated the idea that maybe it was because Brian Flores came from Pat system. And when you look back at the Patriots' success, all the running backs they had were basically plug and play guys. None of them were these big names until they, drafted Sony Michel in the first round. All the other guys were, LeGarrette Blount undrafted, Deion Jones, I believe, fifth round, Rex Burkhead, sixth round, James White, fourth round. They weren't necessarily going out there and getting these big name running backs. They were kind of working with what they had, and, they still had success. But then we got to day three of the draft, and this is where the Dolphins made a move that I will say, out of all the moves that impact 2020, in regards to the draft, this one was the biggest. I do think, Tua, of course, long-term is going to have enormous impact, as well as some of the offensive line guys. But the one that I think fans will notice the most is the Dolphins traded for Matt Breida. They traded a fifth-round pick to the San Francisco 49ers to get Breida. And I think he will do a terrific job. The guy is about as fast as they come. I believe he is one of the top three in the fastest 40-yard dash times from running backs of all time at the Combine. He is just incredibly fast, incredibly elusive. He was just a product of being in an over-flooded backfield over there in San Francisco. And of course, the 49ers, they paid for Tevin Coleman in free agency, so they were going to want to get him the ball. They weren't going to just want to, have him as a backup when they paid him all that money. So it was kind of like they were looking for a reason to turn away from him. And then, of course, Raheem Mostert towards the tail end of the season just kind of went off and had his own success. But Breida is a very good back. He is somebody who could catch the ball well. He can run in between the tackles. And if you get him in open space, it's just so much speed, kind of reminiscent of the early Lamar Miller days back in Miami. This is somebody who I think will have a tremendous impact. Now, something that's kind of a double-edged sword with this scenario is that he is on the final year of his rookie contract. It's a very cheap deal. That's a huge plus. The incentive for him to have a massive season, of course, he's going to want to get a big contract. So that's a pretty big plus as well. But then you think about it, do you really want to give a running back a huge contract if he does have success? The Dolphins still have a ton of picks next year as well. I think next year is kind of the one where they're going to go out and get these luxury guys and potentially draft a running back early on, and then you have him for cheap. So I don't know if he's an answer to the long-term success, but I do think fans will enjoy watching him this year. I do think he's going to be running very, very successfully here in Miami. Now, for the rest of the picks that were made, they had Solomon Kelly, who was drafted out of Georgia, go and continue to beef up the offensive line. That's a move that I cannot argue against. If they want to protect their quarterback, you want to protect Tua, this draft may be non-flashy, it may be kind of more, boring, but this is a necessary step. In the long term, this is going to make, when you get these skill players, they're going to look awfully great when you have the foundation laid in place. They got Jason Stobridge out of the University of North Carolina, a pretty solid asset. I don't necessarily love what I see from him. He has great reach. He has, some decent explosiveness on him there at the defensive line. They got Curtis Weaver, who could play at the edge or play, outside linebacker. He is, pretty decent change of pace. I wouldn't say that he's high motor. He's kind of more on the slow side. I don't necessarily love this pick that much either. They got Blake Ferguson. He's a long snapper out of LSU. Everything I hear about him, as far as long snappers go, is that, he is, deadly accurate. If you look at what he did off the field as well, he is just like, he has a multitude of just different awards. So, that goes back to the character thing. I think that played a huge role. He is definitely viewed as somebody with some leadership qualities. And then the very, probably one of the more interesting picks here, Malcolm Perry out of Navy. He was a quarterback over there, but kind of not really. He was a quarterback. He was a running back. He was a wide receiver. His ability to change direction is amazing. It has me wondering about Jakeem Grant, because of course Jakeem Grant provides some very similar, skill sets and abilities. They both are shorter guys, both smaller frames, but both can make people miss. But it seems like Miami hasn't really used Jakeem Grant aside from being kind of this special teams threat. So if Miami, I think, is able to kind of find a ways to get Jakeem Grant and maybe even get Malcolm Perry involved in the game. He is a very interesting guy. I mean, when I say his elusiveness is off the charts, I mean it. It is a very impressive tape. Of course, his competition wasn't as good as some of these guys who went to the bigger schools. But at the end of the day, you can't teach speed. You can't teach being able to move like that and make people miss. So I do think that he could be somebody who has, you know, some relative success here. So now it's time to kind of give my grade overall after the Dolphins draft. And as much as I would love to give this draft, you know, the A+, and, you know, just be extremely biased, I can't do that necessarily because there are a lot of picks that, you know, initially I just can't, I can't agree with necessarily. I do think the ones in the first round, Tua was an absolute home run. Now, Austin Jackson and Noah Igbinoghene, those are two that I kind of have to trust the process on a bit. I am not too sure that I love them right now, but I see what they have. I definitely see that there's something there, and I'm going to bet that, you know, Brian Flores and the staff that they have in place here is going to get the best out of them. So overall, I give this draft, you know, a B, a solid B. I do think that when it came to the needs and targeting the right areas, they did absolutely that. I love that they, you know, they stacked up and they loaded up this offensive line now that they're getting two of this, this protection. They're building the trenches. I love that. And, you know, as boring as it is, like I said before, it's a necessary step that kind of goes overlooked when you look at the success of teams. You know, people look at all the skilled players and the success they have, but you have to notice it all starts at the offensive line, and it all starts at the defensive line on the defensive side. You need both of those to have some success. But one knock I do have is that I do think the Dolphins and their, you know, willingness to hold on to some late round picks did lose them some good opportunities. I do think getting a guy like Ashton Davis at safety, who the Jets ended up getting, was something they wanted, but they didn't want to give up those picks. Of course, J.K. Dobbins, I still think, you know, as big as I was on Matt Breida, I do think that having J.K. Dobbins for just about the same price and on a rookie contract is still more valuable than what you got with Breida. So this wasn't a perfect draft. And at the end of the day, the article I had was titled Trust the Process, because that's what a lot of these guys are. They are very high character players. They're very intelligent guys, students of the game, like I've said, and they're all willing to put the work in. They don't have the talent that kind of jumps off the paper and it hits you right in the face like some of these guys, but they do have high ceilings, and it seems like that they are betting that they're going to be able to develop some of these guys. So that wraps up my thoughts on the Dolphins picks. Now we go to the whole league, the NFL as a whole, and talk about some of the major headlines from across the NFL. And let's jump right into it with the quarterback position. When the Eagles in the second round selected Jalen Hurts, the quarterback out of Oklahoma. Now, in a way, I see the rationale, but that doesn't change the fact that this was just a colossal reach. I think you could have gotten Jalen like maybe two rounds from then at that point. I don't think there was anyone rushing to go and make a move on Jalen Hurts, but what do I know? But I understand the rationale. You have Carson Wentz, who gets hurt an awful lot, and when he does get hurt, it's always, it seems like, towards the tail end of the season when the Eagles are in prime position to be, you know, making a playoff run. So I do understand you get a guy who everyone seems to say has the it factor. He has played in the big games. I will say that he has been on some very good teams. I think that gets downplayed a lot. But, you know, he has that ability to win, and he is not going to shy away from those kind of situations. So maybe they're hoping, you know, if Carson Wentz goes down, this guy steps in here, and it could potentially be his team if he wins those big games. Like how Nick Foles stepped in and it wasn't his team even though he won the Super Bowl. Maybe they think if Jalen Hurts steps in and Carson Wentz, you know, has an injury that puts his career in jeopardy, that momentum will kind of carry Jalen Hurts and lead to some long-term success. But at the end of the day, still an enormous reach, still one that's a huge head-scratcher. I can see why Eagles fans are furious about it. But I see the logic there, you know, but I think it's a good landing spot for him, but just not at the right time. Now we move on to the Georgia running back, and that's DeAndre Swift, who was selected here by the Detroit Lions. Now the Detroit Lions, I thought, you know, when they drafted Kerryon Johnson, they were going to have, you know, finally a running back they could depend on. But last season, Kerryon Johnson got hurt. He tried to, you know, make a fight back towards the tail end of the season, but that did not stop the Detroit Lions from going out here and getting a running back, someone who was considered the best in this draft class, even though he was not selected first among running backs. DeAndre Swift, just a, you know, very talented running back, as in all facets, kind of like Christian McCaffrey, somebody that you can truly depend on, whether it's on the ground or in the pass game. A very reliable person to have here, just elusive, but also runs with power. I think if you're looking at this from a fantasy perspective, this is going to be a very frustrating backfield, with DeAndre Swift eventually getting the majority of the volume and maybe Kerryon Johnson vulturing some touchdowns away at the goal line. I do like DeAndre Swift long-term if you're thinking dynasty, if you're thinking of someone who could have a great tail end of the season. But as of right now, I do think it might be a little bit of a frustrating backfield over there in Detroit. Now, to stick with the running backs, the Indianapolis Colts selected Jonathan Taylor out of the University of Wisconsin. And this one was another bit of a head-scratcher, because The Colts had a very good season from Marlon Mack, over 1,000 yards this season, and he missed two games. It was a very productive season from Marlon Mack, and he is on the last year of his rookie contract as well, so it seems like the Colts made the decision that, you know, we might have a 1-2 punch this season, but that's going to be it. You're not getting that long-term deal from us. So from the Colts' perspective, I do think Jonathan Taylor is going to have massive success. I love what he brings to the table here. I think this is a good fit for him. And I just think that it's going to be a very frustrating backfield, like I said, with the Lions at the initial part of the season. But towards the end, you know, when Jonathan Taylor establishes himself, he will, I think, separate himself as the lead back in this offense. I do think Marlon Mack, and it's possible Marlon Mack still, even now, the Colts elect to just get something for him. Before the Dolphins made the trade with the 49ers, I was thinking there was a possibility that they might call up the Colts and see what they could get for Marlon Mack. That, of course, did not end up happening, but I wouldn't bet against Marlon Mack being moved before the season begins. Now, we go through some of the other guys here. Kind of a bit of a head-scratcher was Chase Claypool, who was drafted in the second round by the Pittsburgh Steelers, a wide receiver out of Notre Dame. This is a guy who got a lot of hype during the combine. People love his frame. They love his athleticism. But he's another guy that I think is a little bit raw. I don't know if he has all the tools to be a great receiver, and this might have been a pick just purely based on his frame. But then again, a lot of people were saying that same thing about DK Metcalf last season. I do think Chase Claypool is a guy who could, you know, potentially even benefit for if he moved to like the tight end position because of his size. I mean, he almost looks more like Darren Waller than Waller looks like himself. You know, the guy is just that big, but who knows? I'm sure the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to find a way to utilize him. Now, the Green Bay Packers selected AJ Dillon, and this was a massive head-scratcher to me. This one I don't understand, and it has me kind of worried that Matt LaFleur maybe has these kind of ego tendencies, kind of like Adam Gase-esque, like he's already thinking about ripping apart the Packers for the sake of rebuilding them. When you look at the NFC North, that is a Super Bowl, a super winnable division in my eyes. That's one that you should absolutely be betting on right now in the present. You have an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, sure, he has, you know, kind of regressed some bit. He is not in his prime, you know, right now. But if you give him the right tools and you look at the way that division is set up, man, you could still make another run at it. Just give them some tools. And they go out here, they draft a quarterback in round one, his potential replacement. And then in round two, when you have a terrific season from Aaron Jones, when you have a terrific backup in Jamal Williams, they go out there and they get another running back. And they get a running back who is one-dimensional, essentially. He is a ground-and-pound sort of guy. They didn't even go out and get somebody who could kind of be Jamal Williams' replacement. I don't get it. I truly don't. And it kind of makes me wonder if he is already starting to tear down this team and think about the future when they have a real opportunity to win right now. It doesn't make sense to me. Then you look at the Las Vegas Raiders, and I apologize, in the last episode I called them the Oakland Raiders. It's going to take a long time for me to get used to. Las Vegas Raiders added another receiver that I really like out of South Carolina, Bryan Edwards. Just a terrific jump ball receiver. You pair him with Henry Ruggs. That's just an awesome combination to me. And, you, of course, you have Josh Jacobs, who is still just in his second year. You have Derek Carr. He's going to have all the opportunities. There's still a lot of questions whether Derek Carr is actually the long-term answer there. If he can't thrive with these weapons, I don't know what you expect from him. Darren Waller, Henry Ruggs, Bryan Edwards, you still have Tyrell Williams over there, Josh Jacobs. The offense as it stands right now is looking pretty nice. This is one that I'm going to kind of keep my eye on. They have a lot of young talent, a lot of, you know, sustainable success here, I think, offensively building over there in Las Vegas. Some other picks, you had Jake Fromm from the University of Georgia, and he was selected by the Buffalo Bills. And I know, you know, a lot of Dolphins fans on my timeline on Twitter, a ton of them making jokes, you know, stuff like, you know, now Josh Allen will have somebody who can teach him how to be a quarterback. And I understand both very different style of play. Josh Allen's essentially a running back who can also, you know, sort of throw the ball at times. But I will say, you know, as many jokes, you know, are launched at Josh Allen, I think he does a terrific job at finding ways to make his team win. And you look at the weapons he had around him, I don't think he was really going out there and winning with a ton of guys. You add Stephon Diggs to that. I do think that as of right now, if I had to bet on a team winning the AFC East this next season, I'm not talking for the long term, but just the way the Patriots are looking, I do think the Jets had a very good draft this year. And of course, the Dolphins are on the up and coming. I do think the Bills right now, the way the team is built, are probably the best team in the AFC East. And I do think that Josh Allen is catching a lot more flack than he deserves. I think he is primed to have a pretty solid season this year. I think he won't be forced to use his legs as much. Now, I mentioned the Jets having a pretty good draft, and I still think so. I mean, they hit a home run with Mekhi Becton in the first round out of Louisville. I think that was a great pick. I do think they had a need to go receiver, but there was an even bigger importance, you know, for the long-term success to go offensive line and get Sam Darnold some protection. But then in the second round, when surprisingly the Packers went with A.J. Dillon, Denzel Mims out of Baylor just kind of fell right there in their lap. They kind of moved up and they got him, and, you know, it worked out. I think that's a great addition. Everyone's talking about how the Jets only have Jamison Crowder, but don't forget Breshad Perriman. He is on a one-year prove-it deal. I love the incentive there. I did a freak or fluke column where I talk about guys who I think will be, you know, whether their seasons were, you know, freaky or whether they were fluky. I had Breshad Perriman as a freak. I think he is going to be good this season. I think what he showed at the end of last year, his speed was there. His ability to make these tremendous sideline catches are there. The volume's going to be there. I do think Denzel Mims is in a prime position, but I do think people are overlooking what Breshad Perriman is going to bring to the New York Jets offense. I think that guy towards the end of the season will be viewed as their wide receiver one. And then, of course, them drafting Ashton Davis, that's a move that I really want the Dolphins to make. The Jets kind of snatched it right before their eyes. Taking a look at the Broncos, I love what they're building offensively over there in Denver. The addition of Jerry Jeudy in the first round, of course, is a home run. You get a wide receiver one quality when you already have Cortland Sutton there. But then they double down, and in round two, they go with KJ Hamler out of Penn State. And if you listened, I had him on my guys that the Dolphins may be interested in taking a look at. He is just a human joystick kind of player, just, you know, shorter size. He is, I believe, 5'9", 176, just a smaller player, but just a human joystick. Just reminds me of Dante Hall. Seriously, the guy is just very crazy fast and crazy elusive. I do think that was a nice addition there. And then you look at what the Cleveland Browns are doing. The Cleveland Browns, in the first round, they got probably one of the best values, I think. Jedrick Wills, I had him as my offensive tackle one, and they were able to get him at pick 10. That is a home run. And then in round two, they get Grant Delpit, the safety out of LSU, who was regarded by many as, you know, probably the top safety in the class. They had him up there with Xavier McKinney. So they are getting just terrific value. Seems like every draft. On paper, the team is just loaded. And I think the issues at the offensive line last year really showed how much of a detriment it is to your entire offense because they became one-sided, and anytime they had to throw the ball, it just did not work. Just instantly flushed out of the pocket. Baker Mayfield had zero chance. And of course, he wasn't dealing with the pressure well, but at the end of the day, you needed to find a way to get him some help. And I do think on paper, if the Browns can't do it this season, then there is just something horribly wrong going on with the coaching, because there is no excuse at this point with the amount of talent that they have over there in Cleveland. So guys, that is how I'm going to wrap up today's episode. As always, you can follow me on Twitter. That is at Shady Steven. Make sure to follow the podcast account on Twitter. That is at Via The Source. If you could leave a review on the podcast app, that would mean a lot. It helps a bunch to kind of increase the audience. So that would mean a lot. I do have a YouTube channel where I'm planning on posting more, so you can subscribe to there on YouTube. I have like 200 and something subscribers, so I'm not big on there by any means, but I do hope to grow it in the future. And then, as I've mentioned before, I do have the website up now for viathesource.com, where I post some written articles, and I'm very excited to continue writing, and it's been fun so far. So guys, as always, it was a pleasure to be your host. Until next time, I'm Steve Amasso. This was Via The Source.